Hello and welcome to Bela Lugosi's Undead. I'm AJ.
And I'm Spooky Ryan.
And today we are talking about what I think is going to be a yearly tradition for us, a review of the best movies and just kind of the year in horror of 2022.
Woo!
Yeah, and to be clear, it's not just going to be us like every year going back to the year 2022 and just like reviewing that over and over again.
Well, you know what? Now back in 2030, we're going to go back to 2022 and again talk about our perception of these movies.
No, we're just going to talk about some of our favorites of this last year and, you know, just kind of shoot the shit for a little bit. So, Ryan, when you think about 2022 in horror, what is the first thing you're going to remember?
The first thing I'm going to remember is that it's a great year in horror, that
yeah,
it was
fucking banger year in horror.
I know. So like the biggest thing is that I just hope that we can continue to press on all these horror movies. And I'm not sure if it's because streaming, so people are willing to like take shots. And if they don't make it to theaters, they're like, we'll just sell the movie to a Shudder, or we'll just sell the movie to Netflix or something like that. But it just seems like there's good horror that's came out this year, and I'm excited to see if it continues in the future.
Yeah, I think that we've hit a point where people are really, really invested in taking big swings and just unique shots. Like, it is not franchise-driven. There are franchises that are, you know, tent-pulling and helping the whole genre rise up a little bit.
Right.
But, I mean, you look over, like, Letterboxd's most popular movies of 2022 for horror, and you're talking about just, like, let's see, The Menu is an original IP. Nope, right, is a Jordan Peele movie, but original. X, right, was original, even if it's homage. Barbarian is original.
Fresh.
You know, yeah, I mean, Fresh. Bones and All is based off a YA novel, but I mean, like, that's still barely registering. Most of this is not what you would consider in a year where you've got a Texas Chainsaw movie, a Scream movie, you know, Terrifier, Halloween Ends, the MCU dipping its toe into horror.
Yeah.
Those were not the big movies for the most part. It was very much original or at least first entry ideas that were breaking through. And that's awesome. That's so good for horror to be in that situation.
Agreed. Yeah, and I was like so surprised. Like, I usually skip out on the big blockbuster horrors, like Smile felt like that. It was going to be like that, but everyone that watched it loved it, and I was like,
honestly, yeah, dude, it kind of fucking rules. I'm not gonna lie. Yeah, Smile is sneakily like a really dope ass movie.
Now I'm gonna have to go out of theaters to like watch Smile because like everyone really loved it.
And you've also got all of these auteurs working in horror. You've got Ty West returning with not one but two movies. You obviously have Jordan Peele just doing his Jordan Peele shit and just absolutely killing it. You've got Alex Garland with Men. Like, it's cool to have Luca Guadagnino, who also directed Suspiria, directing Bones and All. You've got good filmmakers approaching the genre and just earnestly putting themselves forward in it. And that's awesome. That's so cool that we have that opportunity.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, it's really, like, I've been kind of falling off on, like, watching new movies lately. It's really, like, sort of invigorated me to go get back to watching, so.
So, when we kind of talk about that, obviously we both have some of our favorites of the year. So, Ryan, do you have, like, a top five, or do you even have, like, a top three or four movies of the year?
Yeah, I mean, it's kind of tough because the movies that I really liked are, like, movies that I wish would have been, you know, seen by more people, I guess, is my tops.
So, about this, we'll go back and forth.
Okay.
You name one, then I'll name one, and then once one of us names it, we just move it on, right?
Okay.
Let's do, like, a makeshift top 10-ish.
Got it. Sounds good.
So I'll go ahead and kick us off real quick. My number one movie of the year, period, was Nope, which I think is not only one of the singular sci-fi horror achievements of the last, like, 20 years. I would argue that this is a movie that is going to be rewatched on the level of something like The Thing. That is a completely misunderstood masterpiece in this moment where people are struggling to fully comprehend what Jordan Peele is doing with it. Every time I watch it, I am learning something new. Mm. And it is so brilliant that I love it so much. So let's have the Nope conversation because it's a big one.
Like, I feel like when I watched it, I was like, okay, Jordan Peele is finally just ready to make, like, a movie that, like, is just a monster movie. The big takeaway that I took away is, like, the, you know, starting from, like, the, like, his whole thing with, like, the first black man to ride the horse was a black man riding a horse was the first person on film. You know what I mean? Yep. And then, like, you know, at the end of the movie, it's just him on the horse.
Yeah.
And it kind of felt like, you know what, like, I am on the backs of giants, and now I've, like, been able to write all these movies, and now I'm just going to write this, like, dope monster movie. Like,
bingo, Ryan. That is definitely part of it, is that Jordan Peele is trying to pay homage to the history of black artists in film. Right. I mean, you've got all of that going on, and yes, that is an excellent point about the end of that movie.
Yeah.
It's also, like, such a cool monster movie, like you said. Even if you only appreciate it on that level, it is like Jaws. It's like watching Jaws, but in 2022.
Yeah.
I also would like to say that there's so much ingrained in it about the art itself, about the struggles to actually create something while also trying to understand the limitations of what it means to be human, of fighting against the natural world on something when we have no control. And then beyond all of that, there's this idea about this family that tries their hardest to make something of themselves through the film industry, and they're continually spit out and ignored, and even when they put their whole soul into it, they just got replaced by CGI horses.
Yeah.
Like, there's something interesting in that. And then simultaneously, you have the whole Steven Yeun character is, I want to understand how I can get over my traumatic event by taming this other monster, because one time he was friends with a chimpanzee that didn't eat him, even though it ate everybody else.
Yeah.
And he didn't learn from those mistakes. Yeah. And then leads to the deaths of hundreds of people.
Yeah.
The shot of the year, to me, is Jean Jacket sitting over the house raining blood on it. Like, that was, like, my favorite moment in any movie this year.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, Nope is my number one choice.
That's awesome. Yeah. Yeah, I'm going to go back to my sort of minor movie pick, and I'm going to go with Glorious.
Glorious.
That's my number one pick. So Glorious has that Lovecraftian feel. You know, I was talking to AJ about it. It was, like, very close to being something really, really profound. We could talk about that, but I'll talk about all the things that are good about it. And I really loved the, you know, it's such a small movie. Right. It's literally filmed almost entirely in a truck stop bathroom. So much is told in this truck stop bathroom. It's just really cool. The colors, all of the different things that are going on, the comedy where there's this glory hole that has this, like, Lovecraftian art piece, and the mouth is like a glory hole. And the whole time he thinks he needs to feed his penis to this monster to, like, satiate it. And he goes to stick his dick inside of this hole, and the monster goes, like, you really thought that all of humanity would be saved by your penis? Like,
it's so funny.
Yeah. So, I mean, what were your positives of what you took away from Glorious?
I mean, Glorious is one of the funniest movies I watched all of 2022, period.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I watched 350 movies last year, and it is one of the funniest things, period.
I would love to see how many weeks that is of movie watching. Like,
it's on there. I don't know if you really want to see my Letterboxd number. I said 350 movies. It was higher than that.
Yeah.
I watch more than a movie a day on average.
Yeah.
So, anyway, but Glorious, what I think is so good is, beyond the fact that it, like, very much knows what it is, it comes in at a very cool 79 minutes, which is awesome. Sometimes people are like, oh, well, you know, movies need to be an hour and a half. They don't. They really don't. And sometimes just play within the when it feels right to end your movie. And Rebecca McKendry, who directed it, it is the perfect length for that movie. Okay. So I think that it's awesome. I think it's really fun. Yeah. And I think when you add somebody who's as comedically talented as Ryan Cantwin, and you combine them with J.K. Simmons, who is one of the singularly, like, amazing voices in all of film. I mean, just banger.
Yeah, it was really, really good. And, like, my big thing with it is that it would have been my big critique is that the guy becomes, like, a narcissist, like, sociopath that, like, is, like, a serial killer. Like, I guess that's is that too big of a spoiler for a movie that just came out?
It's okay.
We can cut it, so you can all start over.
No, we're not going to cut it. The movie came out like 6 months ago. We're good.
Okay, we're good to go. Okay. Anyway, so the biggest thing for me is that, like, it would have been amazing if, like, what they did was talked about, like, I don't know, like, toxic masculinity and, like, how the patriarchy, like, affects men in this sort of way. And how, you know, because he literally has to cut out his kidney and feed it to this monster to save the entire universe, you know what I mean? And so the kidney is a place that purifies itself, right? And the kidney was like all, you know, the metaphor is that it's all like fucked up and horrible. And like one of the biggest things that could have been done that would have been a beautiful is that he saw, like, he wasn't like, you know, a sociopath and like a serial killer, but like that he saw that, like, to heal himself and to allow his like partner to heal and survive and be okay, he had to cut out this part that he had learned, these pieces that he had taken with him from like society and like probably his family and all these horrible things. Cause he talks about being beat by his father, you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. And he has to cut out, he has to go in and cut that out of him and feed it to them to save the universe, to save everything. He could have even died. And it would have been a beautiful message about, like, you know, it is painful to take away these things that keep you safe, to take away these things that allow you to continue to exist in a world that you don't have to be truly vulnerable, right? And but to cut those things out allows you to exist and allows you to care for other people. Like, I was like, damn, dude, if you would have gone in that direction, Glorious would have been like this amazingly profound movie. And instead it was just like, men are narcissistic sociopaths and we need to be scared of them. Like, you know what I mean?
I understand what you're saying. I do sometimes agree with the Glorious, yeah. So yeah. I can't fully critique it for its ending, no, but I do understand what you mean. I do, yeah. 100%.
And I liked it. I liked it. I thought it was good, but I was like, oh, dude, it's going to go there. It's going to go there. And it just didn't. It just, like, you know, men are evil, narcissistic sociopaths. But there's another movie on here that like talks about similar things in a really, really profound and useful way too, so that we can discuss. So
all right, so I'm gonna go to my next pick. I love Bones and All. Now I know that you are not as high on Bones and All.
Not as high.
So let me go ahead and lay out my case. So okay. First of all, Bones and All, directed by Luca Guadagnino, starring Taylor Russell and Timothy Chalamet, as well as Mark Rylance, in an absolutely just fucking terrifying role, because he's Sully, the guy, the other cannibal.
Yeah.
Fucking absolutely loved that performance.
Yeah, Sully was great.
But the thing that makes me love the movie is more its homage to other... There's like a long lineage of like Bonnie and Clyde style movies that this one's falling into. Mm-hmm. And among them is Badlands by Terrence Malick. And so just seeing like a cannibal movie in the eye of something like Badlands while also being set in the 1980s, where you could very easily change this metaphor out, where, yes, they're cannibals, quote-unquote, but you could just as easily make it be they're addicts, or that they have HIV/AIDS.
Yeah.
There's a lot of subtext in here that can be correctly manipulated to understand it in different lights.
Yeah.
And I think when you have a movie that's that powerful, that can be extremely helpful in not only keeping the movie relevant for many, many years, but also... Mm-hmm. The fact that I can take that many reads on it is a positive for the movie.
Yeah.
Additionally, the Taylor Russell performance is incredible. She just missed my personal ballot when I was submitting for awards. She was my sixth place.
Oh.
So I love the Taylor Russell performance. I did vote for Mark Rylance. And Timothy Chalamet was like seventh on my best actor ballots. Wow. So when I was just in love with those three performances so much that I just adored them. I also think that when it does choose to get violent, the way it uses blood is so interesting.
And some just, more.
Like, how it almost – it's almost like he's, like – Luca Guadagnino is using it as, like, a painterly object where it is so – there's never a point in time when a character, like, creates bloody something that it's, like, kind of messy. It's always the most messy. It's always, like, an explosion of blood. And disgusting.
Yeah.
And so what I think it's interesting that the violence is never a half measure. It's always the grossest you could possibly imagine. And I think that that's an interesting touch in a movie that is so subtle about small town people trying to make it. And you know, live their lives. So, yeah, I just found myself absolutely enraptured by it. And I know that I am somewhat on a mountain on this one because, you know, you don't love it. Borja, who wrote his rebuttal to my review on the website, did not love it either. So, you know, there, I'm alone on Sunshine State Cineplex's Hill screaming, yes, bones and all, give me more. And that's okay. That's perfectly
you're
fine.
Okay. You can be lonely up there. It's okay to be lonely. Sometimes.
All right, Ryan, go ahead and give your next pick.
Yeah, so I guess the next one that's sort of at the small end of the movies is one that I was really high on that I really enjoyed was He's Watching. Pretty amazing movie. It's just about this, like, two kids that are in this sort of pandemic environment that something horrible is happening. Their parents aren't around. Sort of similar, like AJ said in our last episode of Skidamarink. You know, having all these weird, creepy things go on, and it's this found footage movie, and it just has this really unique way of filming and doing all these things. And I really enjoyed it. It was one of those ones that popped up on my Instagram as, like, things that you might enjoy, and I was like, I'm going to pull the trigger here.
And you did like it.
I really liked it. I thought it was really, really fun, really, really interesting. It took new swings. And then I listened to the podcast where the director talked about it. And, like, he is a film editor. And he sort of took away this experimental movie that he was able to produce. And he was like, how do I take this experimental piece that I learned while I was, like, it didn't matter what I did because it was my art piece, when now I have to go and work in, like, this industry where millions of dollars are on the line? And that's what I love about, like, small horror, is that you can take shots. Because, one, you're not it's not a millions of dollar project. It's like this tiny little project, and you can do something artistic and unique. And that's something that I really love about horror in particular.
Great call. I think that's actually a really good call, and also very personal to you. I appreciate that.
Yeah, absolutely.
I'm going to go and talk about one of what I think was one of the big mega hits in the horror community this year.
Yeah.
I'm going to go with Barbarian.
Yeah.
Zach Krieger's just absolutely batshit insane movie about a woman who goes to catch her Airbnb. Turns out somebody else is staying in the house.
Yep.
And somebody else is staying in the house as well. No, Barbarian is fucking awesome.
Yeah.
I don't want to give away too many spoilers. We have an episode coming out on it next week. So hang tight. We gave people a lot of time to go ahead and make sure that they watched the movie before we wanted to go ahead and spoil it. Right. And so we're giving you one more week. And Barbarian is fucking nuts. It's so good. It's one of the funniest movies of the year. And I also think that it is the best use of two actors just purely on their relation to the public that existed. In terms of casting, there may not have been a better cast movie this year in terms of, like, subverting your expectations by using certain actors.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And, like, this was the movie I was thinking about in conjecture with Glorious, is that Barbarian sort of talks about, like, you know, we're scared of this one guy because we're supposed to be scared of dudes, and he's okay, but there are a lot of men that do really horrible, awful things and are just absolutely shitty. And I think Barbarian touches on that and talks about that subtextually in a really cool way.
Yes, I agree with that 100%.
Yep.
All right, go ahead and pick your next one, Ryan.
I'm gonna keep going down the small movie thing, and I'm gonna talk about Hypochondriac. This movie is really, really, really fascinating. It's basically a giant metaphor movie. This is another Instagram where they were like, you should watch this. And I was like, yes, sir. Like, thank you, algorithm gods. Like, and so I started watching it, and it's basically about this guy that's struggling with mental illness. And it's sort of this generational mental illness. And it's portrayed as this wolf that's following him and chasing him. The ending is just so beautiful. It's such a beautiful movie, a good piece of queer horror. I just really loved it. I thought that it was really, really awesome. And there's nothing, like, really unique or new that the movie's doing except for really the metaphor. Horror wise, it's straight horror, you know, sort of like psychedelic, you know, thriller type of thing. So I thought it was pretty interesting. I think people should go check it out.
Yeah, makes sense to me.
Mm-hmm.
All right, so there's a lot of, like, big titles still on the board that we could discuss.
Yes.
But I think I'm going to hold off on discussing them for other categories that we're going to discuss later.
Okay.
And so I'm going to go to one of our masters that we kind of just have to pay homage to, our respects to. It's a, his name is David Cronenberg. And he directed this little movie called Crimes of the Future that is just, like, a gnarly little piece of just, like, pure body horror through and through.
Right.
Ryan has not seen it yet, just like I have not seen Hypochondriac. But that's okay, because you can now watch it. And it's awesome.
Yep.
So watch Crimes of the Future on Hulu if you want to see some real fucked up shit. Just remember, surgery is the new sex, and that is disgusting in every way you intend it to be. It also has what I think is like a wildly underrated performance from Kristen Stewart, who is like batting a thousand in terms of like how just like fucking odd she needs to be in this movie to make it work. And I love that. And yeah, it's about people like publicly having surgery on their organs and then removing them.
Wow.
Just fucking disgusting shit in a future where people just grow extra organs. Like, it's really interesting, and Cronenberg is weird in all the ways you expect it to be, and there's a man covered in ears. Like, I mean, it's...
I can't wait.
It is, like, such a like a weirdly sick, but also, like, just really fun time. And so, yeah, Crimes of the Future rules.
That's awesome. I can't wait to watch it. I did want to catch it. I just haven't been doing it lately.
Well, no, it's good, because there's so much to watch. There's literally infinite content.
I know.
It's good. It's good. All right, how about your next pick, Ryan?
Next pick, I'm gonna stay small, and I'm going to talk about Fresh. And, God, all of my movies are, like, all, like, have, like, feminist twinges to them, I guess, is kind of my, like, thing that's going on here. Because this mean, movie...
It's fair, because it's in the culture, and I think it's a reasonable take.
Yeah, absolutely. And so Fresh is a really, really interesting movie about sort of, I mean, correct me if I'm wrong, kind of like date rape kind of is like the like undertow.
100% is on the table, yes.
Yeah, and so the biggest thing is that this guy is going in, he's like capturing women, and he's like he's eating them and selling their body parts. And it's a lot of different implicit conversations about women and then directly like using their bodies for sustenance and for monetary gain. And really, really fascinating take. It's definitely a good movie. And that one is streaming on Hulu, and you should definitely go see that one, because that one is both like has like meaning and purpose, but is also like legitimately scary. So I think people should go watch that one for sure.
Agreed, 100%. Mm-hmm. So the last one I'm going to go ahead and pick for today is Nanny. It is an Amazon Prime film from Nagatu Jusu, who, my God, is just, like, so good at capturing emotion.
Yeah.
The last director I've seen capture emotion this well in a horror film was Jordan Peele in Get Out.
Oh, okay.
So Nanny is about a nanny who goes to work for a white family and take care of their child. And suddenly, like, really weird shit starts happening around her.
Interesting.
And you begin to wonder what is causing the supernatural things that are occurring all around her.
Wow.
And a big part of it is about how she has to leave her child back at home in Africa. And it's how do you become an undocumented immigrant and then create a life for yourself while also simultaneously leaving behind the people who mattered to you. And it's about survivor's guilt, and there's so much going on that I think it is like a really tense thriller, and it's upsetting. It is
truly
an upsetting film to watch. And the visuals are so gorgeous. Like, beyond just your traditional, like... The way it uses water is one thing in particular that, like, really stands out. But, yeah, it's
that's
just, like, a beautiful artistic film.
Is Amazon Prime, like, doing a bunch of these, like, different,
so
like, movies
this
about,
this movie actually
like...
premiered at the Sundance Film Festival in 2022. And was such a... It, like, won Best Director. And so they bought it based on that success.
Wow.
So...
Yeah, even... Because Master reminds me a lot of that. And that's
that one was
Prime
also
too.
The same film festival... And also, but that was bought by Amazon before it got there. Because by the time I watched it at the festival, it had already been bought.
It's just interesting that Amazon seems to be scooping up those like social cultural movies, that things that are going on like that. It's interesting that that's the direction.
It's smart to build out your library that way.
Yeah, I agree.
What's your last pick for our, like, pseudo top 10?
Yeah. So I guess the big one that I'm gonna go with, I'm gonna jump to the big ones. Oh, you know what? Fuck it. I'll do Wounded Fawn.
All right, a Wounded Fawn.
Another small movie. So Wounded Fawn was great. This is actually me and AJ watched it because he was like, we were there and we were watching it together. And
yeah, we watched it as part of, I want to say it was Fantastic Fest.
Yeah, and so it was really, I was like, whoa, this movie's awesome. It's very fascinating. Another movie that's sort of like about, like,
yeah, Ryan had a theme this year.
I know, I do have a theme this year. A bit of like a more feminist sort of information and things. That's something that's really, I'm really passionate about. So it makes sense that those are movies that I really enjoy. And just the Wounded Fawn kind of builds into that. This guy's sort of like the serial killer sort of man. And she is sort of like enticed by him, and then he slowly starts to turn on her, become abusive, all these horrible things, and then she has to try to figure out a way to escape this sort of person. Sort of similar to Fresh, right?
I was going to say, I think it would make an excellent double feature with Fresh.
Yeah.
They've got a lot of thematic resonance between them, in different ways, too, I might add.
Yeah, I agree.
I would argue this is like a more like psychedelic.
Right.
Yeah.
Yes. This one's like more like, if you like the more like out there sort of cinematics, then A Wounded Fawn is your go-to. But if you want something that's straight narrative horror, like Fresh is probably where you're going to go.
Yep. Mm-hmm. All right. So this is like our makeshift top 10, but we have plenty more categories to go. Right. So the next category that we're actually going to discuss is going to be our best performances of the year. And I think we should each give a 2 or 3 in this category.
Okay.
So I'm going to go ahead and kick this one off with what I think most people would consider the horror performance of the year, which is Mia Goth.
Damn
now,
you.
The question is, which movie do we give it to her for?
Right.
Do we give it to her for Pearl or X? Yeah. Now, I'm going to make my argument that I think that if you're looking for like traditional dramatic acting, Pearl is your answer between the dance and that like 8-minute monologue. That is just, like, an absolute fucking banger. Yeah. Like, she's so good in that monologue towards the end of that movie. However, in X, she is playing two different characters. And on top of that, she is still putting everything that is in the Pearl performance in X as well.
Yeah.
Under layers of makeup. I would argue that that's the superior performance because she has to play that dichotomy and that weirdness of both characters. Mm-hmm. But what do you think?
Yeah, I know. I'm not really sure. I think like you said, the most straightforward acting performance is probably Pearl, right? Because she has to do so many things. But I think that X, because she's playing both a young, like, spunky woman and also an elderly serial killer. That's pretty fucking cool.
I mean, it's undeniable that Mia Goth has emerged as, like, one of our giant scream queens.
Right.
Like, it's like her and Jenna Ortega are just, like, taking up the space and just owning it. And with good reason. With good reason.
Yep, I agree.
All right, so who do you have as just one of your other great performances this year?
Let me take a moment here to, like, look through. Well, I'm, like, looking through
some research.
While
you're looking through, I've got a couple that I can go ahead and throw out there.
Sure.
So the next big one that I wanted to make sure we did not miss on is Resurrection. It's going to be the performance. I mean, you could go with either the Rebecca Hall or Tim Roth performance, but it is the Rebecca Hall performance that makes that movie roll. I assume you have not seen it.
No, I haven't.
Okay, so the thing about Resurrection is it's definitely about cannibals as well. Cannibalism, a theme in 2022 in the movies.
Right.
But she, Rebecca Hall, gives an absolutely, like, as good as the Pearl monologue was, Rebecca Hall has an even better one in Resurrection, where she admits everything that happened in her life that caused her to be a little cold to a random, like, employee. And then it cuts to the employee, and the employee is just like, what the fuck?
Yeah.
And it's like a 10-minute monologue about Tim Roth eating her baby.
Oh, gosh.
It is, like, so upsetting.
Yeah.
It is, like, just, like, an incredible performance. And I think it just got slept on for most awards, but it was so good. And I think that Rebecca Hall is one of our, like, greatest talents. Again, between this and last year with The Night House, she is, like, subtly giving some of the best performances in horror.
Yeah, I agree on that. I guess the next one that I have up on my list is Ethan Hawke in Black Phone.
Yes, Ethan Hawke is so good in Black Phone.
Yeah, like, I feel like he ran that movie, right?
100%. Like, I mean, yeah. he as the grabber, he's terrifying. Yeah. And the fact that he's able to add some humanity into a role that doesn't really need it is stunning. Right. I think a lot of people are... There is, like, some weird backlash with it, with people saying that it is an anti-LGBTQ performance. Why? I do not read it that way, but I understand where some of those complaints may be, because he is a slightly more feminine, like, performer, so you could argue it's maybe... You could argue that he might be a gay man who's just confused, and therefore is killing children.
Jesus. That's fucking dark.
I did not read it that way, but that is a way many people did read it. And so there's something there, but at the same time, like, Ethan Hawke is so electric that it's, like, really hard to take your eyes off the performance.
Yeah, I agree. I did not even see that at all, really.
So some queer critics brought it to my attention. It was something that I had not considered, and so congratulations for making sure that we sometimes understand it, because, you know, as a cis white male, like, didn't even register to me.
Yeah,
so,
that's interesting.
But at the same time, it is such a good performance that it's you can't really ignore it either.
Yeah, no, I agree. That's interesting. Yeah, I really liked it. I thought that he took the screen every time. And I think, honestly, for me, too, the more personal thing is that the house at Halloween Horror Nights, like, really dug into how much just his presence in the movie and in the house really, like, was scary. Like, just the scene where he's, like, snoring there. You know what I mean? So, pretty interesting.
All right, so I'm actually going to pick up on one of our performances that we kind of talked about. Sure. And I'm going to go with Joseph Winter for Deadstream.
That's a good one.
I think that the difficulty of being that insane-ass YouTuber while also having to balance, like, the genuine horror of it, it's a really difficult act. And I think that horror comedy roles, you know, often when you think about people being rewarded for that, you're looking at, like, you're looking at, like, what's his name, Matthew Lillard for, like, Scream, or you're looking for Neve Campbell in Scream. And those are, like, more, like, dramatic comedy roles. This is, like, the first time I've seen somebody do the cartoonish horror thing since, like, Bruce Campbell, to be honest. Yeah. Like, there's very few people who can pull off this level of pure insanity, and it land. And so, Joseph Winter... Honestly, really good job.
No, I agree on that completely. He is actually on one of my lists as well, like, that I wrote up here is his performance, just because he's so theatrical, right? And his ability to, like, show us this, like, scared but, like, kind of, like, self-absorbed individual was really unique.
Yeah. Do you have another one, Ryan?
Yep, I got, I'm gonna do just sort of in the same vein, Justin Long from Barbarian.
Yeah, Justin Long's really good in Barbarian.
Yeah, because he just, like, you're at first when you meet him, you're like, oh my god, you know, he's being, like, you know, taken advantage of, these sort of things, and you really feel for him because he's Justin Long. You, like Justin Long. Like, do you know what I mean? So, and similar with the guy that plays It in that movie as well, right?
Yeah, Skarsgård, Bill Skarsgård.
Yeah, Skarsgård, yeah. So, like, you're like, oh, Justin Long, he can't be the bad guy, and he plays it perfectly. Where it's like, that is how that person would react to the situation. So I really like that performance.
I agree. It's a great performance. Whew, I'm at a tough point because we only have a couple of spots left.
I know.
And I want to make sure that I'm acknowledging, because, like, so real quick, I just want to get this out of the way. I love the menu. I think the menu is incredible. I have a lot of trouble classifying it as a pure horror film. Okay. I think it's more of a thriller in the same sense as, like, Silence of the Lambs is a thriller. Yeah. So, yes, it definitely has that crossover. So if we were going to – if I was going to acknowledge it, I would be acknowledging Ralph Fiennes.
Okay.
But I am not going to acknowledge it as in this category, per se.
Sure. Yeah.
I am going to acknowledge a weird little movie called Flux Gourmet. Now, did you see Flux Gourmet?
I have not.
Okay, so I am actually going to be giving this award to Gwendolyn Christie. It's a movie about an art institute that the artists have to, like, live in the location, and they make music and food simultaneously. And it is, like, absolutely fucking weird as shit. Like, at one point in time, characters literally eat shit. That's not, like, a joke. But... Yeah, it's a pretty messed up movie, and Gwendolyn Christie plays the woman who oversees this place while also having an affair with one of the artists, and it's a really good performance. And people know Gwendolyn Christie from Game of Thrones. Yeah. She was Brienne of Tarth. And she's also in the Star Wars movies as, I forget what her character name is in those, but she's the chromed out trooper. So here she gets to, like, actually show off and not only showcase sexuality, but also have to handle the absurdity and the satire of the role. And it's a really cool performance. And it's a Peter Strickland movie. So if you guys like Peter Strickland, he's the guy who did, like, In Fabric and Barbarian Sound Studio. So some really, like, nasty little indie horror picks. And Flux Gourmet fits, like, right in that mold.
Yeah, it's interesting. I didn't see it, but that sounds really cool.
I don't know many people who saw it, but it's pretty dope.
Yeah, absolutely. So I would just like to give the honorable mention to Rowan Campbell, who played Corey in Halloween Ends. So,
Brian, that's so mean. So mean.
No, honestly, he did a good job. It was just poorly written. Like,
That's fair. That is fair that he does the best he can with the way that character is written. I will agree with you on that.
All right. Do we have any more, or what do you think?
I have at least one more. I could probably go two more.
All right, I'll let you go two more. I got one more with Sebastian Stan from Fresh.
Do it.
The serial killer in Fresh. Just that ability to play that role and play that sheep in wolf's clothing. Like, I thought that was really, really fascinating. He's so and interesting.
Good. He's so good.
Yeah.
I'm going to go ahead and say Rachel Sonnet in Bodies, Bodies, Bodies. You have not seen the movie.
Yeah, I haven't.
She has just one of the most devastating lines about podcasting that has ever existed, and it resonated with me so much that I couldn't believe it.
Yeah,
it's really difficult to schedule and get everybody on board, and fucking Rachel Sennett is so good. She was in a thriller a couple years ago called Shiva Baby. She's going to be in a movie called Bottoms, which is about women starting a female fight club with the cheerleaders so that she can sleep with the other cheerleaders.
Okay.
She's a really talented actress and one to continue to watch. So just keep an eye on her, and she absolutely kills it in Bodies, Bodies, Bodies. The last person I want to make sure that we do not forget to bring up is actually Micah Monroe from Watcher. Did you see Watcher?
I had not. Okay. No.
So it is on Shudder.
Okay.
As is, it looks like Resurrection is also on Shudder. So you've got we got some Shudder homework for everybody here.
Woo!
Micah Monroe plays a girl who moves to, like, an Eastern European country with her husband, who is, like, a big deal in the business or whatever. It's like a tech company or startup or something, but it's based in Eastern Europe. And she's an American who's just, like, suddenly in, like, Berlin. Or not Berlin, but, like, maybe, like, Prague or something. And she's struggling to find her place. Mm-hmm. And as she continues to go around town, she begins to realize she's being stalked. And every time she brings it up to people, nobody believes her.
Oh, gosh.
And so it's very much like, is she actually being stalked or not? And the person who's playing opposite her is Bern Gorman, who is, like, a terrifying human being. Like, his performance is also very, very good.
That's interesting.
So, it's very well shot. It's very upsetting. I think the closest I would compare it to is, what if you watched Seven from the perspective of the woman in that movie? Gwyneth Paltrow, and how would that unfold? And so I think it's a slick little movie. A lot of people did not like it.
Yeah,
I would argue that they're like, oh well, it's too boring. Like, obviously this is a problem. Obviously she's being stalked. And I'm like, the point of the movie is that men don't believe women. And it's literally the point of the movie. And so that's
interesting.
It's a really cool little flick.
Yeah, that sounds like a right up my alley, obviously.
It actually does sound extremely up your alley. So definitely check that one out.
Yep.
All right, so we're going to move on from best performances, because we've given a bunch there. Let's move on to one of our last couple groups. What do you want to see at HHN? Just blank slate.
Anything.
Which of these movies from 2022 would you want to see as an HHN house?
You know what would be really, really cool is Barbarian.
Yep.
There's so many creepy scenes, yep. Like, Barbarian, you know, with the cages.
Barbarian would be an excellent HHN House effect.
Yeah. What are you thinking?
I am leaning towards the X-Pearl combo.
Oh, shit. Like,
if you could find a way to make it so you do both sides of it in a single house, I think that would be an incredible house. The other one that really stood out to me that I think could be actually surprisingly really good, Smile. If you can figure out how to make some of the practical effects work, it could be really creepy. I also think, though, the problem with that is it's mostly just having your characters just have giant smiles on their face the whole night.
Sure.
I think that their faces is going to hurt after a while.
Sure.
So, I mean, that would be my only downside to that house. But I think that the X-Pearl combo. The other one that I was really thinking about, Deadstream could be a really fucking cool house.
Oh, dude. Deadstream could be a really dope house. That would be so cool. Wow. Yeah, that would be awesome. I would love that. Because the creatures in that one are so creepy and scary.
Yes. Yeah, especially in that last shot of the movie.
Yes. Wow, that would be awesome.
All right. Cool. So moving on from that category, unless you have another option.
No, not really. Right. I mean, like, maybe Glorious would be kind of cool, but it's mostly just atmosphere. You know what I mean?
They stick you in the bathroom for, like, 4 hours. Yeah,
and there's just, you just see the glory hole. They just stick you in the bathroom. So.
There's obviously one that we didn't discuss that I'm sure could potentially be on the table in the future.
Yeah, sure.
Terrifier. Terrifier 2.
Oh, yeah, that would be.
Actually could be on the table in the future. Arch the Clown, for those who love him, is very upsetting. It's a very, very, very gross franchise, which I enjoy it for that. I think that the reason why you're not hearing it on our list very much is because this movie is very long. A 2.5-hour slasher is a lot. It's a lot.
That's and way too much.
I appreciate that they took a giant swing, but there's not enough there.
No.
So that's my only big problem with it.
Yeah. Damn, 2.5 hours for a slasher is a lot.
It's a lot. All right, so let's go ahead. What was the most surprising movies of the year?
I'll let you go first.
So I'm going to go with, I mean, we obviously already talked about Deadstream a lot, so I'm going to skip that one for now. But the one that, this is a thriller more than a full-blown horror movie. I think it's kind of in the same vein as The Menu, but it's so terrifying that I did feel scared during it. It's called Soft and Quiet, and it is a one-shot movie about Nazis.
Interesting.
Following a school teacher who goes to a meeting, and while she's at the meeting, the camera turns and you see that the baked good cheese brought was like a literal swastika cake. And then as you follow them throughout the day, the group gets like more and more riled up, and they go to commit a hate crime. And so you have to watch the hate crime unfold.
Wow.
And the repercussions of everything. And so it is a horror movie in that sense.
Yeah.
It is more like thriller in the idea that it's, you know, it is very much like real people doing things. It's not supernatural. It's not a slasher per se. But what they do is horrific, and it's hard for me to ignore that. So, yeah, it's a horror in a different way. And it's more just like viscerally upsetting. Than something like The Menu, which is more poppy.
Yeah.
So, yeah, Soft and Quiet would be one of my most surprising movies of the year, directed by Beth De Arahu. I may have just butchered her name, but it's a really good movie. So.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, we've been talking about all the movies that I think that were surprising to us, like movies like Glorious, movies like Deadstream. I think Shudder's starting to figure out ways of pulling in original content that's really good. I think Shudder just generally has been much more surprising. I know somebody that used to watch the Shudder originals, and they were like, they just stopped because they didn't enjoy them. And I think that's a mistake. I think they're starting to hit their stride, and hopefully these firings and downsizing doesn't affect that.
Yeah, I mean, I can't disagree with that. They've just been they've been on fire for the last 18 months.
Yeah, I agree.
All right, so I think the next one that I wanted to point out is the Yule Log movie.
Oh, yes!
In terms
that's
of, like...
actually a good one.
In terms of, like, it was actually just, like, super surprising that, one, nobody had thought of it before. Yeah. And two, that it just kind of like just dropped and all of a sudden was there and was awesome and very upsetting. I thought it was very inventive with how it was using the tropes of the actual, like, Yulog films, for lack of a better term, to its advantage. I just thought it was really creative. I thought it was a really fun little movie on Adult Swim. It's also from the director, so it's from Casper Kelly, who had also directed the Too Many Cooks Adult Swim clip, which, if anybody remembers that, it's fucking terrifying.
Yeah.
To tie back to something we were talking about in our last episode, they also directed the Scooby-Doo project, which was a Blair Witch Project joke, like a parody with the characters of Scooby-Doo.
Yeah.
Which, I mean, like, what? How awesome is that? That has ever existed. So yeah, this guy is really creative, and I think the Fireplace, aka the Adult Swim Yule Log movie, is just like one of the most surprising movies of the last year, without a doubt.
Yeah, I think the one thing that's surprising about Too Many Cooks is Edid from Walking Dead is like in it.
Yep.
So that's pretty cool. I read up on the article because I was like reintroduced to it, and like there was like, where are all the people in Too Many Cooks nowadays? And like, it's just like a crazy list of things that went on during that.
All right, do you have another one?
I'm pretty good. What about yourself?
I think that I have one more that I would definitely like to bring up. I mean, so first of all, Pearl, I guess, kind of needs to be like honorably mentioned.
Sure.
Because we only knew about X, and then X came out, and all of a sudden there was a sequel.
That's
so
actually true.
So, like, we have to just at least like acknowledge that it was a big surprise.
Yeah.
The other one that I want to touch on for, like, just most surprising was Master. I think that this little – it ended up going to Amazon. This little movie has a lot to say about academia and about what it means to be racist in a – in different environments. I think a lot of people assume that racism is confined to the South. It very much is not. And so I thought it was a very interesting way of portraying that. I also think that the Zoe Renee performance is just really, really excellent.
I also think that it really speaks to, because like I worked at a university while I was watching it.
Mm-hmm.
And like one of the things it really speaks to is like, you can't just ignore what happened. Do you know what I mean? You can't just be like, oh, we just need to move forward. We have to just move forward, because without addressing it, and you're just moving forward, thinking about the future, thinking about diversity and inclusion, now there's like no level of like healing that's able to go on.
Yep, exactly.
And like, I thought that Master was really beautifully portrayed that, because like I worked at a university, and like that's what they want to do. That's actually what they want to do. They do not want to address that those issues.
So that's kind of our year in horror. There's still so many more that we could have discussed.
Yes.
I think that, you know, just quick shout out to Speak No Evil, one of those just the most disturbing movies I watched all year. Quick shout out to Piggy, a nice little Spanish slasher serial killer film. Symphony is a really interesting anthology film. Any others you want to shout out, Ryan?
No, I think that we covered most of the movies that I think that we had watched that we really enjoyed. Just like, you know, the small ones, the ones that we really want to like try to support, that I personally want to really try to support. Hydrochondriac, like he's watching from those like smaller movie companies and production companies that are really trying to do something more creative and artistic with their horror movies, you know?
Yeah, I mean, like on that note, like I'm trying to think of a few more. Obviously, You Won't Be Alone was another big one that I forgot to mention. You know, it's about witches in fucking Macedonia, and they're shapeshifters, and it's gross and disgusting and fun. The Leech was one that a lot of people really, really loved, kind of about, like, Christmas and priests and faith, and it's really awesome. If you're in the mood for documentaries, you have the giant found footage phenomenon from Shudder. You also have In Search of Darkness Part 3, which is just, like, going from, like, 80s horror to 80s horror.
Right.
In like 5 or 6 minute like segments, but it's actually like the movie is like 5 hours long or something like that.
That's crazy.
So pretty dope. Oh, I don't know how, you know what, we forgot to mention this, and I don't know why I forgot to mention this, Mad God. Mad God is one of the most surprising movies of the year. Yeah. Phil Tippett, the man who learned how to have dinosaurs walk on screen in Jurassic Park, spent 15 years making a fucking stop-motion movie, and it's one of the most disturbing things I've ever watched in my entire life.
What is it, Mad Dog? Mad God.
It's on Shudder. Oh, shit. Holy shit. It is. I mean, like, truly, I don't even think there's a plot. there is technically a plot. Sure. But it's just upsetting as shit. Yeah. And the last one that we almost forgot because, just a side note, and I've been complaining to Ryan about this, there are a lot of movies that technically released in 2022 that are listed on like IMDb or Letterboxd as 2021 films. And one of these movies is called We're All Going to the World's Fair. And it's kind of about a teenager who is sucked into creepypasta stories. Oh, and like she can't like understand like what's reality and what's not, and it's all so like shot inside of her like bedroom. Wow. So yeah, fucking another dope ass fucking movie. This one's on HBO Max. Okay, so go watch that one if you can.
I'm gonna watch that one.
Yeah, there's just like so many good things that we love about horror, and I mean we tried to touch on some of them, but we didn't get to everything. So if you love the movie from 2022 that we did not talk about, let us know. Shoot us an email. You can go ahead and hit us up at bellalugosipod@gmail.com or at alan.french@sunshinestatecineplex. Mm-hmm. I'm on Twitter at @thealanfrench. We're on Twitter as well as @bellalugosipod. Ryan, what's your Twitter handle?
I'm at keepitspooky09.
Right. And if you guys have any other questions for us or more recommendations that you want, we can drop them, so just hit us up at any point in time.
Yeah, absolutely.
All right.
Love to hear from y'all.
Yeah, exactly. With that being said, I'm AJ.
And I'm Spooky Ryan. Keep it spooky.
Peace out, guys.